If you're listening to this, you are likely a manufacturing executive, maybe a plant manager, or a digital transformation leader tasked with taking your operations into the future. And if that's the case, we have to start this deep dive with a pretty harsh reality about operating in 2026.
Yeah, the reality that the old air-gap security model is completely dead.
Exactly. That comforting idea that your factory floor is physically and electronically isolated from the outside world, it's gone. Relying on it has just become this dangerous nostalgia, because Industry 4.0 was never simply about connecting machines to screens, right? It was designed to connect decisions across your entire supply chain.
Which completely changes the risk profile.
It does. Our mission today is to look at the architecture of these connected environments and understand why industrial cybersecurity has fundamentally shifted. It's no longer an IT governance side topic. I mean, it is a production continuity issue, a critical safety mandate, and frankly, a board-level risk that dictates whether your entire digital transformation succeeds or just collapses.
And I think industrial leaders have been hearing, you know, generic warnings about cybersecurity for over a decade now. But this year feels different. We are watching three distinct, massive pressures collide all at once.
Right, starting with the raw attack pressure.
Exactly. The telemetry Dragos is tracking right now shows 119 different ransomware groups actively targeting industrial organizations in 2025. That is a huge jump from 80 groups just a year prior. And manufacturing doesn't just make up a small portion of those victims.
It's the vast majority.
Over two-thirds. Manufacturing accounts for over two-thirds of them. The sector is squarely in the crosshairs because attackers know downtime on a factory floor is incredibly expensive, and that forces faster payouts.
Two-thirds of all industrial ransomware targets being in manufacturing. That concentration of risk means the threat actor business model has is fully matured around factory downtime.
It has, and the second pressure converging right now is the regulatory reality. In Europe, you have the NIS2 directive and the Cyber Resilience Act, the CRA, and they are reshaping the baseline of what is legally required just to operate.
We're looking at strict reporting obligations here.
Strict reporting, product security mandates for the CRA that kick in on September 11, 2026. So this is moving from a theoretical compliance exercise to actual executive liability and market access restrictions.
And then you add the third pressure, which is the architectural dependence on software.
Right. Plants are pushing massive amounts of data toward cloud orchestration, advanced analytics, AI models. That level of hyperconnectivity just shatters the illusion that dropping a firewall at the edge of the plant provides any real operational security.
Let's look closely at that shift in the threat model, actually, because understanding how the attack surface has changed is usually the biggest conceptual hurdle for leadership teams. Think about the friction of legacy systems.
They were clunky, but they were isolated.
Exactly. When you had limited connectivity and you relied heavily on manual intervention, that friction naturally constrained the pathways for a catastrophic failure. A specific machine might break down, or a localized network switch might fail, but the failure was contained to that cell.
Industry 4.0 removes that operational friction intentionally.
Right. You strip it away to enable cross-site benchmarking, remote diagnostics, predictive maintenance. But the catch is that the risk no longer just sits in the physical devices. It sits in the interaction model between those devices. A modern cyber incident in a smart factory is rarely a clean, isolated IT event anymore. It operates as a highly efficient business interruption engine.
And every architect, every transformation leader needs to map that new interaction model, because a connected factory is now exposed across five overlapping layers. And the fundamental rule of defense here is you cannot protect what you cannot identify.
So let's break down those five layers. The first one is the asset layer.
Right. These are your programmable logic controllers, your PLCs, your sensors, drives, robotic controllers. These are the physical brains telling a valve to open or telling a robotic arm to weld. They are the ultimate targets. But, and this is crucial, they are almost never the initial entry point for an attacker.
Because attackers don't just magically parachute onto a factory floor and land inside a PLC. They have to walk through a connected digital door somewhere else in the architecture.
Which takes us to the second layer, the engineering and operations layer. This includes the human-machine interfaces, the HMIs, and the engineering workstations. These are typically Windows-based machines where the human operators actually monitor and control the physical processes.
And Dragos has been continuously issuing warnings about this specific layer, haven't they?
Constantly. Because compromises here are frequently mischaracterized, IT teams will see a Windows machine get infected and they treat it as an IT-only incident.
Just re-image the machine, right?
Right, but if that specific engineering workstation sits directly in your operational path, taking it offline for remediation stops the production line just as effectively as a physical motor burning out.
And the blast radius just expands from there. Once we leave the actual floor, how do the external connections factor into this mapped attack surface?
That's the third layer, the connectivity layer. This is the infrastructure moving data in and out of the plant. We're talking about API gateways, plant-to-cloud connectors, MQTT brokers.
Think of an MQTT broker as the postal service of your factory floor, right?
Mm.
It constantly ferries telemetry data between your machines and your predictive AI in the cloud.
Exactly. And if an attacker intercepts or compromises that postman, they control the data flow. Then we hit the fourth layer, which is the software and supply chain layer. This covers the firmware on your devices, third-party code libraries, vendor software.
This is exactly the reason the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA, is pushing the industry so hard to adopt Software Bill of Materials, or SBOMs.
Yeah, an SBOM is essentially an ingredient list for your software. If a major vulnerability drops for a specific code library, you need to know immediately if that ingredient is baked into the software running your critical safety systems.
Which leaves the fifth layer. And this is something that often doesn't even fall under the purview of the plant manager, the business dependency layer.
Right. These are your enterprise resource planning integrations, your ERPs, and your supplier portals. They sit in the corporate IT environment, far away from the physical machines.
But think about modern just-in-time manufacturing. If your plant relies on an ERP system to schedule material movement, to assign work orders, or issue quality release certificates, what happens when that ERP is locked down by ransomware?
Production stops. The physical machines are perfectly healthy, but the robotic arms literally don't know which chassis they're supposed to weld. Production grinds to a halt 0 feet from the finish line simply because the business logic is unavailable.
And that perfectly illustrates why the threat model most organizations operate under is dangerously outdated. We still imagine a hacker taking over a machine, but the reality is a compromise in a distant digital dependency ripples out to halt the entire production schedule.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that brings us to a massive business friction point that manufacturing executives wrestle with daily, which is remote access.
Oh.
Modern multi-site operations demand remote access. Your predictive maintenance algorithms require it. Your OEM vendors need it to troubleshoot specialized equipment. It's an operational requirement. It's not a reckless luxury.
The danger isn't remote access itself.
Right. The danger is unmanaged convenience quietly becoming a permanent structural weakness.
Unmanaged remote access is undoubtedly the most underrated exposure point in smart factories today. When we audit how plants actually operate, we find that remote access usually grows organically and invisibly.
It's the temporary fix that becomes permanent.
Yes. I've seen environments where an engineer sets up a temporary VPN so a vendor can monitor a finicky boiler over a holiday weekend. 2 years later, that temporary tunnel is still wide open, it's entirely unmonitored, and it leads straight into the core control network.
2 years.
2 years. We see vendors demanding permanent, always-on VPN tunnels as a condition of their support contracts. Or we see a single local admin credential written on a whiteboard and shared across three different shift rotations.
It's terrifying.
In 2026, remote access has to be treated as a highly privileged operational function. It must be brokered through a secure jump host, strictly authenticated with multi-factor authentication, continuously logged, and critically, it must be time-bounded. You open the tunnel for the 2 hours the vendor needs it, and then you close it.
The disconnect in capital allocation is really hard to ignore here. Organizations are spending millions of dollars on sophisticated network detection tools and AI dashboards, yet they're essentially leaving the master key under the digital doormat for a third-party vendor who might have terrible internal security hygiene.
Buying expensive threat detection while ignoring fundamental access control is the very definition of an immature security strategy. Secure remote connectivity is a primary operational control. If you don't govern who can walk through the front door, the alarms inside do not matter.
Right.
And that actually transitions us to a concept that traditionally gets a massive amount of pushback from industrial engineers, which is zero trust.
Zero trust definitely triggers some eye rolling on the factory floor.
Well, wait, time.
There's this assumption that it's just IT marketing buzzword soup. Or that applying it to an OT environment will just paralyze production and lock engineers out of their own systems. But strip away the marketing, And zero trust simply means you stop assuming a device or a user is safe just because they happen to be plugged into the internal network.
Because we have to ask what inside the network even means in a modern facility. Being inside no longer guarantees safety, not when you have third-party contractors plugging their laptops directly into legacy engineering stations, or when you have flat network architectures where every device can communicate with every other device by default.
And CISA's guidance on industrial control systems is unequivocal about this. Segmentation and microsegmentation are the absolute foundation of defensible architecture.
Translating zero trust into a physical industrial reality starts with strong identity assurance. The practice of shared shift logins is a massive liability. You need to know exactly which human operator or which automated service account is issuing a command.
And beyond identity, it requires a fundamental restructuring of how systems talk to each other.
Yes, explicit communication policies based on function. Your critical safety instrumented systems and your core control networks should never sit in the same undifferentiated trust pool as your enterprise email servers or your remote vendor support channels. You need continuous verification of those communication flows.
Because the goal of zero trust in OT is not to make the plant unusable for the maintenance team. The goal is a deliberate blast radius reduction strategy. Think of it like building bulkheads into a submarine.
That's a great way to look at it.
If one compartment breaches, you seal the doors to save the rest of the ship. You want to make lateral movement by an attacker incredibly slow, incredibly difficult, and strictly contained to a single microsegment of your architecture.
And the bulkhead analogy is perfect because it addresses the core management gap we see in boardrooms across the industry right now. Board members and CEOs are asking their plant heads a very direct question: are we secure?
And the honest answer, in far too many environments, is that leadership doesn't actually have a definitive view of what's running on their floor.
No, they don't. And compounding this visibility crisis is a market flooded with empty AI promises. Vendors are selling AI as a silver bullet that will magically overlay onto a chaotic network and just secure the factory.
But the architectural truth of industrial security is absolutely, you cannot secure what you cannot identify.
Exactly. CISA continually emphasizes that maintaining a definitive, continuously updated asset inventory is the bedrock of any incident response capability. Yet in many plants, asset knowledge is dangerously fragmented. You might have an old network diagram from 5 years ago, a spreadsheet of PLCs held by the engineering lead, and a set of firewall rules understood by a single administrator who's retiring next month.
That's not operational resilience.
No, that is a fragile dependence on institutional memory.
So where does AI actually fit into this reality? Because transformation leaders are under immense pressure from their boards to deploy AI everywhere.
AI has genuine value, but it absolutely does not erase the need for architectural fundamentals. AI can dramatically improve detection times, speed up analyst triage, correlate subtle anomalies across thousands of complex asset behaviors. But if you deploy an advanced AI detection tool onto a completely flat, unsegmented network, the AI will simply act as a very fast notification system telling you that a ransomware infection is spreading everywhere at once.
Right, it'll just tell you you're doomed faster.
Exactly. It cannot fix missing asset visibility, and it will not compensate for a vendor VPN that was left open for 3 years. We also have to stay grounded in the threat landscape because attackers are heavily utilizing AI right now to scale their exploitation capabilities, to refine their spear phishing against plant operators, and to accelerate their network reconnaissance.
The sequence of building maturity is strict, and there are no shortcuts to bypass the hard work. Visibility has to come first. You map the environment. Architecture and segmentation come second.
Yeah.
You build the bulkheads. Operational patching and access control come third. And only after that foundation is solid do you layer on AI as an accelerator. Doing it in any other order is just compliance theater.
It really is.
And speaking of compliance, the definition of what makes a mature organization is rapidly evolving. Meeting regulatory standards is no longer just a paperwork exercise where legal asks if you technically fall under a specific framework. Compliance is now a commercial trust layer. It dictates your market access, your credibility as a supplier, and your ability to secure cyber insurance.
The shift driven by frameworks like Europe's NIS2 and the Cyber Resilience Act is profound because it raises the maturity floor across entire supply chains. If you cannot prove your resilience, major manufacturers will drop you as a supplier because you represent a systemic risk to their own compliance.
Immature security programs chase the latest software tools and wait passively for the next audit.
While mature programs design their entire control architecture based on rigorous OT-aware frameworks, They align with standards like NIST Special Publication 882 Revision 3 and the IEC 62443 series. These frameworks are built specifically for the unique physics and safety requirements of industrial control systems, rather than just copying and pasting enterprise IT policies onto the factory floor.
And a major part of stepping up to that maturity level is expanding our definition of a cyber-physical attack. Ransomware gets all the media headlines because it's loud and destructive, but it is not the only threat to a connected factory.
Not at all. Ransomware stops the production line, which causes immediate panic and immediate financial loss. But data integrity attacks are arguably more insidious and far more dangerous to long-term business survival.
Right.
Imagine a food and beverage processing plant or a pharmaceutical facility. If an attacker breaches the network but doesn't deploy ransomware instead, they subtly tamper with a mixing recipe or alter the temperature thresholds on a bioreactor by just 2 degrees while spoofing the HMI to show normal readings, the results are catastrophic.
They could corrupt your predictive maintenance models or alter quality release data.
Yes, your entire decision-making system becomes fundamentally unreliable. Entire production batches are ruined, millions of dollars are lost, and you might not even realize you're producing compromised goods until quality control catches it, if they catch it.
Modern threat actors don't always need to encrypt your systems to cause devastating harm. They just need to corrupt your trust in the underlying data, because Industry 4.0 runs entirely on trusted information flows. If you can't trust the telemetry coming off the floor, your digital traceability collapses entirely.
And that highlights why resilience and recovery are the true ultimate metrics of a mature industrial security program. Prevention will eventually fail. The real test is how you operate through the failure.
A powerful indicator of that resilience is how an organization handles patching. ENISA, the European Union Agency for Cybersecurity, recently reported that patching critical vulnerabilities still takes many organizations over 3 months.
Leaving a known critical vulnerability exposed on an internet-facing industrial system for over 90 days is a brutal indicator of operational fragility. Mature teams do not sit around waiting for generic IT service windows that happen twice a year. They patch based on operational consequence and active threat intelligence.
And crucially, mature programs aggressively test their backup restorations under intense simulated pressure.
Always. They operate under the baseline assumption that an incident is inevitable, and they demand proof from their teams that they can recover physical operations safely and quickly from a cold state.
Which brings us to the strategic imperative for every manufacturing executive, plant manager, and transformation leader navigating this landscape. Cybersecurity is not a tax you pay to the IT department so you can deploy fancy new digital tools. It is the fundamental underlying condition that allows your digitization efforts to scale safely without risking the business.
The smart factory, by its very definition, must also be a defensible factory.
And we have to clearly define what defensible means here. The defensible factory isn't the one with the thickest stack of expensive security products. And it isn't the one with the most AI dashboards glowing in a security operations center.
A defensible factory is built on disciplined network architecture. It's built on limited, continuously verified trust. It aggressively governs remote access as a privileged action. It segments its critical networks intelligently to contain breaches, prioritizes software transparency through SBOMs, and above all, it creates deep structural alignment between the operations teams, the process engineers, and the cybersecurity professionals.
They have to work from a shared operational risk model, rather than acting like rival tribes fighting over uptime versus security.
That alignment between engineering and security is everything. Because the more intelligent, autonomous, and connected the factory floor becomes, the more dangerous unmanaged trust becomes.
So we want to leave you with a specific challenging thought to mull over regarding your own architectural reality. Consider the massive web of digital dependencies in your own connected factory right now. Think about the vendors, the cloud analytics, the ERP tie-ins. If a critical, aggressive cyber incident forced you to instantly sever all external connections and cut all third-party API links to stop a spreading attack, do you actually know which of your physical production processes would immediately fail? If you do not know exactly what breaks on the floor when you pull the digital plug, then you do not truly own your architecture. Your architecture owns you.